3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Hey, hey, welcome to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. Here we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust, and instead we celebrate the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. Hello, hello. I'm your co-host, Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Engagement here at BPD, and I'm joined by the Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you today?
Oh, you know, I'm good. These news flashes are so fun because we always have a lot to cover, and we're going to cover a lot in our bite-sized short news flash by No Normal episode this morning.
Here for it.
All right. You're ready? You're ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. We have three key headlines we're going to hit today. The first is an update on all things TikTok. So as many know and have been seeing across all the news feeds, there is a potential TikTok ban out there. And just a little bit of background there is because of security concerns around TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, which is based in China. There have been requests for TikTok and ByteDance, or ByteDance, to spin out TikTok to a US-based company. And if not, if that does not happen within less than a year, then there would be a ban on TikTok in the US. So that's the background. There is some interesting and new news here. So first and foremost, we expect to see a TikTok challenge appeal set for September arguments. So the U.S. Appeals Court on Tuesday of this week, and I should say this is Thursday, June 6th, when we are coming to you. So on Tuesday, June 4, the U.S. Appeals Court fast-tracked their oral arguments in a challenge to this law. So no surprises there, but you know, ByteDance says they have no plans to spin out TikTok. In the meantime, just yesterday, there was continued rumors from a Reuters report that suggests that TikTok is working on a clone to its algorithm for a completely new and separate U.S. app that would operate independently of ByteDance. So this is sort of a way to maybe get around that ban, because again, ByteDance is not wanting to divest the service, understandably so. So, you know, this is a rumor only, but, you know, we could see a new kind of TikTok app spin up, which I think would be interesting given the world of echo chambers that we're already in. But we'll save our political debate for another combo. Chris, well, what are your questions or thoughts around this?
Yeah, it's questions because, you know, this clearly is not an area where I'm an expert. And I know that, you know, again, your team spends a lot of time working with clients around tactics, including TikTok. So give me a sense of, you know, what you see in terms of both, not only just within our client base, but within the space of clients that are active within TikTok and kind of and what it means with them or for them, I should say.
Absolutely. So healthcare organizations are not as active on TikTok as many other brands, right? Retailers, travel brands, CPG brands have been on TikTok for quite a while. However, quite a few of our clients and healthcare organizations are on TikTok. So certainly the ones you would expect, like the Cleveland Clinics of the world, which is quite active from a brand standpoint in creating content, very similar to, you know, how they might be on Instagram. However, quite a few hospitals and health systems around the nation have been experimenting with TikTok in the past few years. And a lot of times it's from an organic standpoint. So really just experimenting with, you know, interesting, kind of fun, conversational, authentic content. But a lot of times it's also with paid media. So for many of our clients, we run paid advertising efforts on TikTok, even when they don't have an organic presence, in order to reach younger generations or, you know, parents or families. And the ads have really performed well, in some cases beating other channels. So implications, just, you know, kind of a quick hit on that. I think it's nothing, you know, no alarm bells are going off here, right? But the key thing is always be considering a mix of channels, right? We don't own the algorithms. We don't own our audiences on these channels. So we should always be optimizing across multiple channels, Facebook and Instagram and paid search and digital advertising. So keep doing that. And, you know, expect a world where you might have to move off of that channel and just be prepared with a mix. I mean, that's not new news. So it's just something to keep watching.
Yeah. Okay, good. That's helpful. I appreciate that perspective, Stephanie.
Yeah. It's very interesting though. The world that we live in these days, changing every day.
Yes. For sure.
Okay. So another interesting piece that we found that is, I think, quite applicable to a lot of our clients' work is a recent report from American Hodge Association. Chris, do you want to set up what the AHA has shared?
Yeah. So just in the last couple of days, actually, the American Heart Association came out with a report around the continuing and projected impact of cardiovascular disease in the United States. And basically, they're asserting that a variety of things, including population shifts and in risk factors, is going to triple the cost of cardiovascular disease in the country by 2050. So that means, this is mind-blowing to me, that as a proportion of U.S. gross domestic product, the economic impact of cardiovascular disease is going to increase from 2.7% in 2020 to 4.6% in 2050. So, you know, I mean, I think the usual suspects are the things that, you know, we can point to, things like an aging population, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity. I mean, things like, the stats in here are a treasure trove, right? And they're really, they're scary, you know. So 6 in 10 U.S. adults are expected to have some kind of cardiovascular disease. Stroke prevalence going from doubling from 10 million to 20 million. Things like worrisome added trends that are contributing to this, obesity among children rising from 20% to 33% by 2050. You know, and of course, the continuing storyline of all of these disease and risk factors among people from racially and ethnically diverse backgrounds is on an even kind of worse trajectory. So to a certain extent, it feels like a little bit about Wild Kingdom. And for those of you, for those of our more mature listeners, you'll remember what that was like watching, you know, watching a zebra eating grass in the savanna and a lion kind of stalking it and feeling helpless as we watched it happen. But yeah, I think we're seeing it all come to roost right now, Stephanie.
Yeah, this is frustrating. It's depressing. It makes me want to get on my soapbox about preventive medicine in this country and the lack thereof, and about the continued increase of healthcare costs and spending in this country. And that, you know, yes, I'm so, there are multiple things here, right? Like, incredible treatment progress. That's awesome. But as we've talked about before in our, I think, our funnel wars, you know, piece, which is the top of the funnel in terms of preventive medicine, and it's just not supported by healthcare, right? So how do we get ahead of this kind of thing? That's one question I have. How do we get ahead of this? And how do we bake that into the business side of it and not just the social good side of it? Number two is, you know, for hospitals, health systems, providers of all kinds, given access challenges, how do we even start to deal with this from a down funnel care standpoint? It raises so many questions, and I am frankly really worried.
Yeah. I mean, it is scary. I mean, your comment about access, I mean, you know, we work across a variety of clients every day. And of course, we know the access challenges. And in places like, or services like cardiovascular, it's even more critical, right? And also very frustrating to consumers. I think we've seen such a massive trend in all of the different research that we do around consumers getting frustrated of not having access when they need services. But I agree. I don't have the answers. I wish I did, but I think, you know, we're also seeing the tendency to kind of focus, given the precarious financial situation of many health systems, and while things are improving, the need to continue to get back to some kind of stable financial position, the tendency seems to be to focus more on down funnel sick care. And I think the question that we have to ask ourselves as marketers is, we understand that's a need for our organization to focus on procedures and the like. And it is hard to justify spending, you know, on higher funnel education and outreach, you know, and health engagement. But at the end of the day, you know, that is something that we have to make room for. How do we do that within the context of the work that we're already doing? I don't believe these have to be mutually exclusive. We just have to kind of be thoughtful about that.
Right. And at the same time, my argument would be we need a full systems change here. And I don't just mean healthcare system. I mean like our culture. And I don't understand why this kind of thing isn't being discussed in the upcoming presidential election. I mean, I guess I do understand why, but it's just, you know, it's not going to be solved. You mentioned education. Yes, that's part of it. I did read a really interesting clinical study over the weekend around how there was a study done of folks with various comorbidities and issues that could have been solved by preventive lifestyle solutions, and education did not work. It did not work. So it's a cultural shift. It's a system change. We need a movement, but anyway, we could deep dive into that another day. I think the key thing is warning signs and for, you know, healthcare organizations, how are you all dealing with this before costs get out of hand, before access issues continue to get even more squeezed? And as you mentioned, Chris, from a top of funnel standpoint.
Well, and just challenge ourselves to do, you know, I mean, again, we need a movement, but it also starts with kind of one foot in front of the other. You know, it's like start with some simple things that you can do within the context of your own marketing to try and make things just a little bit better on the engagement, consumer engagement front.
I can always count on you for a much more practical step forward. I love that. Great. That's great. I'm like, let's change the world. And you're like, let's start here. I love that. That's really helpful. Okay. We have one more quick topic and we'll keep it quick. So Chris, you shared with me, was it last night? I think, gosh, you and I Slack back and forth at 3 a.m. and I love it. So you shared with me a report that you found from Salesforce about the state of AI and generative AI in marketing, which we have hit quite a bit in this podcast. But there were some really interesting stats on where marketers are. Do you want to give us the headline?
Yeah, it's a good read. Would encourage folks to take a look at it. You know, they surveyed 5,000 marketers worldwide, and there is a real focus on from CMOs and marketers on embracing AI and kind of really focused on trust. I think the report talks about this idea of the start of a renaissance, right? And again, we've kind of been advocates and participants in that ourselves. What surprised me is the degree to which the study kind of reflects adoption by different marketing organizations. And what's interesting is they segment responses into high performing organizations, moderate performing, and underperformers. And in total, what surprised me is 32% of those they surveyed basically said that they were already integrating AI, they're fully implementing AI into their operations. And I have to tell you, I had an eyebrow up when I read that, because I'm like, I'm not seeing it. And then I have to be honest, the scary part of me felt like maybe I'm not seeing it, because in healthcare, we're not necessarily in that group of necessarily high-performing organizations enough to, and this is not meant to be a criticism of our industry or our clients, but we're not early adopters of things, right? So, you know, I think that's what kind of scared me. You know, at the same time, underperformers, you know, they're just not even really kind of looking at AI. So there's also some interesting dynamics. There's a lot of FOMO going on, Stephanie, you know, this fear of missing out, you know, marketers worrying about, it's 88% of them, in fact, worrying about missing out on the benefits of generative AI. And then, of course, you know, wound up in all the trust. So there's fear, there's some kind of action. I still question the degree to which people are really fully integrating, but man, we have to start paying attention to this in our space, or we do risk getting left behind by those that are jumping ahead. Conversely, you could say it gives us a competitive advantage if as an organization, we can really put a stake in the ground.
Yeah, we love a call to action. That's great. I guess I'll do a yes and here, which is I have quite a bit of connections on in other industries. And I think in talking to folks across other industries, I actually think that your eyebrow raise is warranted. I think that there's still a lot of, you said FOMO, there's a lot of like, we know, I mean, across all industries, we know we need to get ahead of this, but still at this point, it is in nascent days and there's still a lot of questions of how, what's the right way to integrate in marketing. So I'm just going to give one little example of how platforms are moving forward that we need to be aware of just quickly. So LinkedIn in recent days has started adding labels to generative AI generated content on this, on the platform. A lot of questions around that, but that's one example of, you know, yes, we're already seeing AI generated content in all of our spaces and places, but do we even know what it is? And for advertisers and content creators and marketers, there's two implications there. Number one, if you're creating it, you know, you got to be thinking about disclosing it. Number two, people are going to start seeing this more and more and more. And what are the expectations around it? So those are just one teeny, teeny, tiny part. But I'm just going back to say, Chris, your eyebrow raise is warranted. Your call to action is warranted. I think that the key thing is, you know, it is on marketers' minds is what that report called out. And so I would just say every organization should be talking about it and thinking about it and figuring out what are their guidelines and policies and how should they use it for marketing initiatives.
Yeah. And, you know, with, you know, we're mid-year and by September, we're going to start planning for fiscal 25, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, that's the opportunity that we have to say, all right, what are we going to start doing? And putting it on paper and a deliberate plan. I'm not necessarily saying to execute, but to make progress. How do we explore? How do we educate? And what are some places where we start to experiment and try and use that? Now's the time to start thinking about it.
That's right. Well, we'll end it there. Now's the time. This is the No Normal. And our job here is to, you know, explore worlds where things don't feel normal and nothing ever does anymore. And so, you know, that's our rally cry. So we'll wrap it up there. Thank you everyone for joining. Thank you, Chris, for your brilliance. I love these moments where we can chat about these things.
As always. Thank you, Stephanie.
So if anyone wants to get a hold of us, you can do that at nonormal@bpdhealthcare. We would love for you to share the show. Let us know, anything you want us to cover. Don't be satisfied with the normal because it's just going to get even more no normal from here over the next few years. So push that in your organization and we will talk to you soon. 3